This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia businesses need workers and former inmates need jobs. But bringing the two together means a lot of effort on both sides.
It means that you need a GED. It means that you need a driver's license. It means that you need a bank account. It means that you need a job.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. A World War II soldier from McDowell County, West Virginia, will be buried Saturday, nearly 80 years after he was killed in action. Maria Young has the story.
Private First Class Mose Vance was 21 years old when he was killed in France in 1945 during a major offensive operation by German forces. He was the oldest son of 13 siblings.
As a child growing up, I remember my grandmother having pictures and leaf clippings and so forth on the wall when Mose was in World War II. She carried a letter in her purse until she passed away, where she had tried to contact the military with hopes of someday finding him.
That was Farrell Vance. He heard the stories about his dad's big brother all his life and began searching for his uncle's remains a few years ago. With the help of a sponsor in France, Farrell used military records to trace the battles his uncle fought in and identify the area where his remains would likely be. The sponsor located the soldier's bayonet, and from there, technology solved the case.
I gave a DNA sample through the military. Actually, me and three other family members gave DNA samples. And with our DNA samples, we got a match. And the military kind of took over from that once we made a match and started making necessary arrangements to get him home.
Private First Class Mose Vance, whose medals include a Purple Heart and a Gold Star, will be interred on Saturday during a graveside service in Painesville. His cremated remains will be buried between his parents.
Oh, gosh, I was very emotional.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Maria Young in Charleston.
This summer, drought conditions have ravaged agriculture in West Virginia. Paired with recurrent heat waves, it's been deadly for many crops. With temperatures rising globally, some say more challenges lie ahead. This week, Eastern Panhandle reporter Jack Walker visited Tabler Farm in Jefferson County. He spoke with agriculturalists there about sustainable farming techniques they say could be the path through a changing climate.
On the beaten paths of Tabler Farm, cicadas and crickets buzz from all directions. It's a hallmark of summer on the Jefferson County property. But an ongoing drought in West Virginia's Eastern Panhandle makes this season different. The dirt underfoot looks dry, even dusty. And blistering heat means the team here has to work twice as hard to keep crops hydrated. Adapting to a changing climate isn't new territory for the staff on site. The farm is run by Shepherd University and helps teach students and community members about sustainable farming techniques.
Tabler Farm is kind of an extension of campus. That's it's 158 acres, and a portion of it is under vegetable production. So it's used as a demonstration site for classes, for soil science, integrated pest management, sustainable agriculture.
That's Brooke Comer, an assistant professor of environmental science. She teaches classes on sustainable agriculture at the farm. Comer said the team adopts sustainable practices in part to show current and future farmers techniques they can implement on their own.
All of it is in service to giving experiential education to the students, especially those that are in the sustainable agriculture and resource management concentration of environmental science.
For starters, there's the hydroponics lab. It's a pretty impressive soil-free farming setup. Large tanks pump water into buckets where plants grow tall overhead, their roots suspended in the liquid. A water-based growing system might sound a little counterintuitive as a solution to dry spells. But Peter Villa, the associate professor who runs the lab, says it's more efficient than continuously rehydrating a soil bed.
a lot of other places claim savings up to 95% of water saved versus a traditional soil farm.
Beyond the plants, the lab is home to another unexpected life form, fish. Tanks of blue tilapia are connected to the hydroponics water supply. This way, their waste, and when they die, their bodies, can add nutrients to the water.
The fish, it's like manure. Okay. You have cow manure, and that's how you fertilize
I didn't know you could just do that from water. I didn't realize
It's the same process, except that it's in a water system.
Yeah.
Other sustainable techniques at Tabler Farm are less tech-heavy. For example, the farm also advocates for cover cropping. Many large-scale farms till every season, ripping up the earth for their crops. This can make planting easier, but it also disrupts the soil microbiome. Plus, exposing soil to direct sunlight can dry up its water reserve. Cover cropping means growing a different plant on farmland during the off-season. Through cover cropping, farm coordinator Madison Hale says roots can trap water and nutrients underground, which farmers can access later for crops.
A field that has been recently tilled and has, you know, nothing growing on it, it's bone dry. So it provides a little microclimate, sort of, which is really helpful.
If cover cropping seems too cumbersome, Hale said farmers can also place tarps or mulch atop croplands. These coverings trap water underground so farmers don't have to waste water and continuously rehydrate the soil.
So when you have hot, hot, sunny days like today, any moisture that may have been in that ground from a small rain that you had the previous night is going to evaporate much more quickly on bare, exposed soil.
Comer said farmers can also use less water by practicing drip line agriculture. Some farms launch water across crops with large sprayers. These can get the job done, but they don't put water directly into the soil, which means it can dry up before it's even reached the plant's roots. By running small tubes alongside crops, farmers can more directly send water into the ground. And by dispensing low-pressure water on a regular interval, Comer says they can hydrate more soil with fewer resources.
Targeted irrigation through drip irrigation, where you're putting it right on the plants as opposed to watering the weeds or even the cover crops, then you are putting that water right where it's going to be used and turned into vegetables.
This summer, drought conditions have plagued the Eastern Panhandle for weeks. But the region could get up to 4 inches of rainfall this weekend as Tropical Storm Debbie travels up the East Coast. That downpour could end or reduce the local drought. But Hale said protecting agriculture doesn't just mean addressing yearly conditions. It takes reckoning with a changing climate.
I'm just hearing more and more from farmers like that predictability that we used to have is not there. Like the temperatures are just like up and down. We have so many more extreme storms that are like with really high wind or hail or flooding if you're in an area that is susceptible to being in a flood zone.
But investing in sustainable agriculture can be costly, and Hale says some career farmers get worried about the financial toll of new methods. This can stop them from adopting techniques that could pay off in the long run, both environmentally and financially. That's why she says the burden of financing and advocating for sustainable agriculture shouldn't fall on farmers alone.
If we really want to see a significant change in our agriculture system, we need to have policy change that is supportive towards regenerative and sustainable agriculture.
You can learn more about Tabler Farm and its sustainable growing techniques at our website, wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Jefferson County.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:53. Cloudy skies today. Chance of rain and thunderstorms, especially in the east. High temperatures in the 80s and 90s. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms. Some heavy rain possible. Lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the west. Cloudy in the east, where there's a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Marshall Health Network Arena, entertaining Huntington and West Virginia since 1977. Information at mhnarena.com. Like many other states, West Virginia needs workers. Us and Them host Trey K moderated a recent event in Charleston called Second Chances for a Stronger Workforce. Organizers addressed employers' concerns and urged expanded reentry services. Here's an excerpt from our latest episode of Us and Them.
Judge Alloy believes in second chances. He presides over the Northern District's drug court program. Drug courts are set up to help nonviolent offenders whose criminal behavior is directly tied to their alcohol or drug use. Participants can get their charges dismissed if they successfully complete a treatment program.
Because the courts now have become the de facto way that we deal with substance use disorder, with mental health issues, with people who have suffered trauma. And the truth is, we weren't built to deal with them very well.
Judge Alloy says 90% of those in the criminal justice system have experienced trauma. In West Virginia, about 60% of people sentenced to state prisons and local jails have substance use disorder. Alloy says the criminal justice system has improved the counseling and treatment programs offered to inmates, but he says recovering from trauma and addiction isn't enough to ensure an inmate's successful reentry once they're released.
Because you can recover, but unless you replace one life with another life, then you don't have a complete recovery. And so that means an economic recovery. It means that you need a GED. It means that you need a driver's license. It means that you need a bank account. It means that you need a job.
At the event, the audience watched part of a public television documentary called Being Free. It profiles three formerly incarcerated people and their search for careers after prison. Then there was some frank talk about what it takes to make reentry and work training programs a success for the employer and the employee. Some on the panel know from personal experience what it means to get a second chance. I moderated the discussion and began with Charlotte Webb. She and her husband are both in recovery for substance use disorder, and they are the founders of Charleston Property Restoration, a home construction company that hires the formerly incarcerated.
Well, what are some of the specific challenges that you've dealt with and maybe the types of solutions that you developed to create a dynamic that's positive for your company and your employees?
The majority of people that we have hired who are returning citizens have substance use disorders, so there's always the danger of relapse. We've tried to build within our company an employee assistance program where if they do relapse, they can get help. We hold space for them. But I find really probably the biggest challenge has been our own thinking that being charitable and trying to do for and give, a lot of times really did the opposite. Like for instance, like transportation. We just provided transportation for everybody because nobody had a license. So we got up early and, you know, transported them. And it did not incentivize a single person to get their license. Uh-huh. It wasn't until we looked at one and said, you are leadership material, but we cannot consider you until you have a license, that he got a license. Somehow our charity was more toxic than it was empowering.
That excerpt is from the latest Us and Them podcast, Can Former Prisoners Help Fill Our Workforce Gaps? Download it from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, NPR One, or Spotify, or listen online at wvpublic.org. Us and Them is supported by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, WVPublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.